Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon and welcome to today's episode of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. In this hour of today's program, we are going to talk about St. Dominic de Guzman. He is the prolific founder of ostensibly one of the most influential religious orders in the Church. This is an order that has influenced not just the evangelistic mission of the Church and the great expansion of those efforts across the world. This order also has given us some of the greatest minds the Church has ever seen. Albert the Great, Dominic himself, I should say, Albert the Great, who, amongst other things, has given us the heritage of the scientific method. He is the systematic doctor par excellence. We have Catherine of Siena, and most of all, we have St. Thomas Aquinas. And these are just to name a few. The Dominican heritage spans centuries, and we have much to be grateful for in the public sphere for the Dominican heritage. So we will talk about St. Dominic de Guzman. We'll get to know him. We'll get to know his order with Father Cajetan Cuddy. And then after that, we want to talk about staying human in an era of artificial intelligence. Joseph Vukov has written a book entitled Staying Human in an Era of Artificial Intelligence, and it engages the boom, the present boom we are seeing right now in terms of the development of artificial intelligence technology. It is replacing a lot of things that would otherwise have been completely dependent upon human enterprise. And this is unfortunate. AI is taking over those very things that are definitively human. We are utilizing AI to make art, to write sonnets, poems. In fact, there are different AIs that sometimes aid people in the authoring of whole essays. And it's unfortunate that there's been a real breakdown in the quality of thinking in academia because of the manipulation of AI resources. So we're going to talk about what it means to maintain those very things that keep us human, those very things that define our life in leisure, art, poetry, literature, the contemplation of beauty. AI is able to do a lot of things, but it's not able to contemplate. It's not able to actually engage the human condition in light of the divine image. And this is why we have to have this conversation now. More on this after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, August 8th. It's the Feast of St. Dominic. Today's news brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. Six Christians and a bus driver were arrested in Paris earlier this week for riding around in a bus that featured a graphic objecting to the Olympic opening ceremony. The bus was also emblazoned with the words, "Stop Attacks on Christians," and the website for a petition in defense of rights of believers. The bus was sponsored by the grassroots group Citizen Go. Representatives for the organization say the vehicle was intercepted by French police at gunpoint and its members were taken into custody. After about 24 hours, they were informed they would not be charged. The crackdown against the church in Nicaragua continues as the Ortega regime has arrested at least 12 priests since July 26. Several of them are still in custody, reportedly under house arrest. Clergy have been exiled or arrested over the last 3 years and include the imprisonment of Bishop Rolando Alvarez in 2022. At least one debate between former President Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris is set. ABC News is announcing that Trump and Harris agreed to a debate on September 10th. During a Thursday press event, Trump said he agreed to two more debates on NBC and Fox, but those networks have yet to confirm. Wall Street is closing with stocks sharply higher. This comes after new labor market numbers gave investors a boost in confidence towards the economy. At the closing bell, the S&P 500 rose over 2%. The NASDAQ gained nearly 3%. And swimmer Katie Ledecky and rower Nick Mead will lead the U.S. flag bearers at the Paris Olympics closing ceremony. Ledecky became the most decorated female U.S. Olympian of all time. Meanwhile, Mead helped the men's rowing team with their first ever gold in 64 years. The closing ceremony will be Sunday. From your Ave Maria Radio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Today we celebrate the feast of the great Saint Dominic, one of my favorite saints, and someone whom I love dearly. And we get to know him and his order with Father Cajetan Cuddy. Father Cajetan Cuddy is of the Order of Preachers. He is a Dominican. He's Assistant Professor of Dogmatic and Moral Theology at the Dominican House of Studies in Washington, D.C. Father Cuddy, it is great to speak with you again.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
You know, the last time we spoke, you and I talked about the demise of public theology. It's providential that we are talking about St. Dominic and the Dominicans because they've been at the forefront of engaging the discourse of public theology. So let's talk about Dominic's heritage in terms of engaging the culture with sound learning and preaching.
Yeah, that's a very profound connection you draw out, and I think it comes from the fact that St. Dominic and his order, the Dominicans, the motto of both was the truth.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is supreme for St. Dominic and for his order. That's what they're consecrated to, the Dominicans, and therefore truth knows no limits, therefore, which means there is no part of human life, whether that be the individual, a family, a town or village, a state, a nation, the world, history that isn't shaped by the truth. And so with his profound conviction that the truth liberates and the truth perfects,
mm-hmm.
Truth is important. It's worth fighting for, whether that's in conversations in private, whether in your own personal study or in the public sphere. So yes, truth is Dominic's vision, goal, his destination, his objective. And that's why he and his sons, the Dominican priests, the Order of Preachers, have done what they've done throughout the centuries now.
I couldn't agree more. And I think about the great master theologian, St. Thomas Aquinas, whom I know you share a deep love of as well. Question 16 of the Prima Pars, he talks about truth itself, right? Truth qua truth. And about the correlation between thought and res, thought and thing as it exists. We are experiencing a public epistemological crisis, the likes of which we've never seen before in the public sphere. And a lot of what Dominic and Aquinas and the entire Dominican order have to give us in terms of remedying this needs to be reclaimed.
It's true, and this is why, as you know very well, people are unhappy and,
mm-hmm.
and lonely. It's because, as you point out, you know, what the nature of truth is. Truth unifies, because when we know something, what happens is our mind, in a spiritual way, called an intentional way, is united to what we know.
Yeah.
We are changed by what we know. And so if people don't believe truth is possible or important, that means that they're not united to reality and therefore are profoundly isolated. And I heard just before we came on a little bit about the concerns about artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that artificial intelligence doesn't know reality. It's not a consciousness. It's not a knowing power.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, it processes facts in a way that can't replace the psychological, the personal, the intentional union of a human person.
That's right.
Made in God's image and likeness, as you adverted to, with the things that God knows and loves and has created. Truth unites. When you and I both know something like 2 + 2 = 4, you and I are united in that knowledge. And if truth is not possible, then you and I are radically separated and
yep.
just isolated.
And Dominic was such a, all of the biographies of his life, he was such a keen, keen might be the wrong word I'm looking for. He was austere in how he conducted himself. He expected excellence from his sons. But this was a man whomever encountered him would say had a deeply compassionate heart. This was a man whose interior, the depths of his being, was moved to love par excellence. That and he was such a marriage of true intelligence as opposed to artificial. And I'm bringing this up because one thing artificial intelligence cannot do is pour soul into its things. It can rewrite a report, sure, but it can't make true art. It's just graphic representations of things. Dominic, however, becomes kind of the antithesis of that. The man encapsulated what real intelligence ought to look like.
It's very true. And yes, he was always described by those who knew him as the preeminently happy, joyful person. Mm-hmm. They say he was always smiling, always encouraging. When he met the worst sinners, the most difficult situations, he never became discouraged. And the reason why is he knew that God, as the truth, can overcome any human privation, error, problem, and sin. And so it's because that God is the truth, and all that he does and is created and redeems, restores, is truthful, adjectively as a description, and God is all-powerful, God is the all-powerful truth, no error, no sin can frustrate, ultimately, what God can do. And so that's why I think if Dominic were here today on this earth, of course he's in heaven, mm-hmm. he would smile at artificial intelligence and all the potential, and he would just say, well, that's nice, but we got something better. He says, we got something, we can actually know reality, we can, and God is the one. It's not, you know, the AI will never replace God or the church. And he would just laugh because he would say, why would you put faith, so to speak, in something you have created, computer technology, artificial intelligence, when we have a God who is truth and ensures that all those who sincerely seek the truth find it.
Yep. And I love that you bring that up, because one thing Dominic would have been a proponent of, and it comes directly from the scriptures, is that all intelligence comes from and goes back to God. We can genuinely speak about a divine intelligence. And his son, St. Thomas Aquinas, wrote beautifully on the notion of intelligence in the divine nature as intrinsic to the substance.
Absolutely. God is one. He's simple. Of course, he's triune. But the Trinity, the three divine persons, share a single essence and nature, which is one. And so God's being is his knowledge and is his love. That blows our mind, because we are not simple. We are complex. We have parts. But this means, and it's back to the great dignity of what God has invites us to enter into, having made us, is that we can think God's thoughts after him. So when God, from all eternity, knows what a tree is, his idea, his the divine rationes, the divine ideas and concepts of a tree, he puts that idea, not just in a mental abstract way, but concretely in the tree, giving it a tree nature. In other words, a tree corresponds to God's knowledge of what a tree is. It
That's
reflects.
Right.
And we, when we know what a tree is, our mind, through the tree, indirectly corresponds to God's knowledge, because when I know what a tree is, I didn't make it like God did, but I can understand what a tree is, and that tree reflects God's knowledge. So in knowing a tree, I'm thinking tree thoughts after God.
That's right.
And that's the same as all things. Every truth out there reflects the divine intelligence, and it's the great dignity of human persons to think God's thoughts after him.
And that's why truth matters. There's an objectivity to the order of truth, to even the lexicon that we utilize in dialoguing about truth. The more we engage the truth, the more, in a very real way, our intellects are coming into contact with the divine intellect.
Absolutely, yes. That's, and this is where today, as you know, and I'm sure you've dealt with this, and you have many callers, or you can walk down the street and you hear this. We all like to say today, everyone's spiritual. No one's against spirituality. And one of the themes I like to remind people of, including my students as well as people when I preach, is that there's no such thing as a non-intellectual spirituality, because our intellect, our soul, our spirit, they're all one. And therefore, the way the soul, all human persons today are ironically, paradoxically, I would say contradictorily, trying to find an authentic spirituality of their interior being, their soul, devoid from the truth. When St. Dominic would say, if you want a real spirituality, apply your mind and your heart to know the truth and to love the good, because your intellect is your soul is your spirit, therefore where your intellect goes, so goes your spirituality.
Oh, that's wonderful, Father. That's so beautifully pristine. And I encourage everyone to ponder that over the break. And we're going to continue this conversation with Father Cajetan Cuddy, Assistant Professor of Dogmatic and Moral Theology at the Dominican House of Studies in Washington, D.C. And we are talking about St. Dominic and the great heritage of his order, the Dominicans. I'm Marcus Peter.
Every year, couples who go on the Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. Join us on the next Good News Cruise from January 5th to 11th on the Royal Caribbean's Oasis of the Seas. You'll be joined by Father Michael Schmitz, Teresa Tamio, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and many more speakers. Cabins are selling fast, so be sure to book your spot now. Faith and fun on the sea and in the sun. There's no topping that. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the travel tab to find out more. This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart friendly, ride your bike everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Today we celebrate the feast of St. Dominic de Guzman. And my guest is Father Cajetan Cuddy of the Order of Preachers. He is Assistant Professor of Dogmatic and Moral Theology at the Dominican House of Studies in Washington, D.C. Father, one of the things that marked Dominic's life was that he believed that truth was diffusive of itself. And he insisted, in fact, the exact quote is, we're not called to hoard the seeds, but to spread them. And he meant that in terms of the truth of the gospel. And boy, do Dominicans do that to this very day.
Yeah, it is the great joy of being a Dominican. And it's funny, Dominicans are all very different. Anyone that's met one Dominican, the old joke is, you've only met one Dominican, because we're very unique. And mm-hmm. But the one thing all Dominicans do share is an insatiable desire for the truth. And in this way, we're not any different than anybody else, because truth is grounded in reality. It's union in the mind with reality, mm-hmm. and no one ultimately is content with anything that's not real.
Yep.
We want real food, real friends, real oxygen, real drink, real laughter, real experiences. We want the truth, and Dominicans just do this by way of religious profession. We are professional truthist. But we are very similar, and everybody else is like that too, just maybe not religious professionally. So
that's beautiful. I'm going to use that from now on. We're close to a lay Dominican chapter where we are at the station, and I have a lot of friends from that chapter. Al Cresta was a member of the chapter as well. And
yes.
So it's wonderful, truly. My bride and I are discerning, so do pray for us. But that being said, I love that you mentioned that, because being quote-unquote professional truthists is really the engagement of the intellectual appetite and all of the intellectual powers to the pursuit of its natural, the fruit of its natural appetite, right? The object of its appetite. But in doing so, one of the things that winds up happening is you know the truth, that you may choose the good of the truth. And that also tempers the passions well. That's the prerequisite for a virtuous life.
It's so true. And so what happens is the passions, the emotions, how we feel are real and they're good. This is mm-hmm. the problem. A lot of Catholics think that after original sin, because of sin, the emotions are bad. And St. Thomas, a great Dominican, as you know and have said already, my metaphor for speaking of the emotions is Thomas would say the emotions are not like rabid dogs mm-hmm. that are out of control, and you got to starve them and keep them locked up and chained. Rather, emotions are like little puppies, which means they want to follow the guidance of the intellect and the will. They get excited, and sometimes they resist, but deep down, puppies don't want to rebel against the master. They want to follow.
Right.
And the way that we get the puppies to follow the order of reality, virtue, which is living in the authentic good, truthfully, is that the intellect and the will have to grasp and conform to the way things are. And mm-hmm. so... If we were to say, like, for your apostolate, for the radio station, let's say there was someone who came to the radio station and says, I'm going to make a donation. Here's one of two checks. You can choose one of them. Mm-hmm. And you look at the first check, and it's a check written out for $100. You'd be like, okay, that's generous. That's nice. And then you look at the second check, and it says $1 million. Mm-hmm. Immediately, your mind and your will would know that the second check is more good, gooder, mm-hmm. as my little nieces and nephews would say. And so in that way, you know, the intellect and the will would not worry about, would not suffer any complications from the emotions about discernment, what should I do? But it's very mm-hmm. clear. And so with God, when we know how good God is and what God does and how good virtuous actions are, any complications from the puppies, from the emotions, fall away. Mm-hmm. Basically, the way we deal with sin and problems in the emotions, the sense appetites, the passions, are when we see more clearly the truth. Basically,
that's right.
The solution to all sin and disorder is more truth.
That's right. That's right. And in fact, in my personal journey, deeper and deeper into the intellectual tradition of the church, what I've come to realize is the deeper pursuit of truth leaves you wanting more, but it also axiomatically orders your soul. You can't pursue the truth of the church without prayer. So there's a real element of the pursuit of holiness here, the growing into sanctification by means of the constant virtuous study of divine revelation.
It's true, because that's as what you're pointing to is the profundity that God, through by way of the natural law, by making things, rocks, trees, mm-hmm. marriage, when we can understand that, we think God's thoughts after him. What God has done out of his largesse and goodness is revealed to us directly supernatural truths like the Eucharist,
right.
Like marriage as a sacrament, like baptism and the Trinity. So through divine revelation in the church, God has given to us direct access to his own supernatural knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a beautiful thing. And that's why he was not content for us merely to live within our own mind or by our own mental resources. But he says in the Articles of Faith, in the Creed at Mass, here are supernatural truths given to us in a supernatural way, namely, I am speaking them to you that you can also live by and pursue not just natural happiness, but supernatural happiness.
Yep. And that's, so, okay, we need to acknowledge that. We are made by God and stamped with the imago, right? Stamped is a terrible word. We were granted the grace of the imago within us, which means that our teleology is supernatural, but there's no way we can achieve that by our own means. And Dominic was so keenly aware of that. This life is a response to the Father's grace being poured out into our souls.
It's so true. And that's why preaching, you know, the Dominican order that he founded is called the Order of Preachers. And it really is simple. It's like if let's say you and I, with, you know, we're meeting people that whenever people make a donation to them, they keep choosing the $100 check and not the $1 million check.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. And what we would do is we begin to explain to them, $100 is good, but do you know what $1 million is?
Right.
And let me explain to you, those zeros mean this, like that. The one there means that, like this is mm-hmm. a lot more. And so we'll say with preaching, all that the preacher does and Dominic's sons do is they point more clearly to God. It's like saying to the world, you're living for many good things, you know, food, pleasure, you know, power, success. Those are fine. He says, but the Dominican says, let's look at God, see how good and true he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that you most profoundly desire.
That's
the only
right.
reason you're choosing disordered goods is because you don't know how infinitely good God is. And that's what preaching is. Preaching's not indoctrinating people and tricking them into following the old-fashioned laws of the church. It's showing them through words and examples in the pulpit how good God is, so that their will, their heart, naturally wants him.
Yep. And it's one of those things that I love about Dominic so deeply, that he cared about the fact that when we preach, we essentially every word is uttered towards the terminus is the salvation of the soul of the listener. You have that sermon, you have that homily to lead that soul down the path of salvation. And Dominic and his sons have never wasted time in utilizing that opportunity and potential well.
It's so true. They say, so you're kindly speaking about my order, which I love dearly, that a Dominican, if a Dominican is a faithful Dominican, he will die in one of three places. He will die in the confessional, forgiving sins. He will die at his desk, studying, learning more about the truth so he can preach well, mm-hmm. or he will die in the pulpit. He says, if a Dominican is anywhere else than in those three places, something has gone terribly wrong. So...
Well, I can aspire to at least one of those things, Father. I can commit my life to study.
There you go.
Well, Father, if people are interested in reaching out to you, maybe to even learn a little more about Dominican spirituality, how can they do that?
So they could do a Google search. Cadgerton Cuddy. I'm there's articles, both popular and academic, that are accessible. There's YouTube videos. I've worked, helped out at the Thomistic Institute, but also they can go to the website, athomist.com, which is I write there, athomist.com.
Thank you so much, Father. I greatly enjoy our conversations. My guest has been Father Cadgerton Cuddy of the Order of Preachers, Assistant Professor of Dogmatic and Moral Theology, and we've been talking about the sublime heritage of St. Dominic de Guzman and the Dominican Order. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Location, location, location. These are the three most important factors in real estate. The same might be said for colleges. Trudging through snow to get to an 8 a.m. statistics class is a much different experience than breezing by a palm tree to the raucous applause of a laughing gull. With the average temperature of 84 degrees and wetland nature as your backdrop, it's no wonder students tend to stay once they visit our campus. Ave Maria University, your future location, location, location. Visit avemaria.edu.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
He was a doctor of the church and one of the most famous saints of all time.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Augustine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, but he balanced his genius with humility. He once declared, "It was pride that changed angels into devils. It is humility that makes men as angels." He died in 461.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. St. John the Apostle records the John chapter 6 Bread of Life discourse, in which Jesus states that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. Who better to understand John's writings and subsequent teachings than a disciple and student of John, St. Ignatius of Antioch? In his letter to the Smyrnians in 110 AD, Ignatius writes, "I have no taste for corruptible food, nor for the pleasures of this life. I desire the bread of God, which is the flesh of Jesus Christ. And for drink, I desire his blood, which is love incorruptible." The Catholic Church absolutely follows St. John and St. Ignatius in taking Jesus at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
John 6, verses 48 to 58. Jesus says, "I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness and they died. This is the bread," meaning me. "This is the bread which comes down from heaven, that a man may eat of it and never die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread which I shall give for the life of the world is my flesh." At which the Jews disputed among themselves, saying, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" They're scandalized by this. How is it that we're not? How is it that we just hear this and go, "Oh yeah, I know that passage"? They're just outraged and at least perplexed. Sane people, inspired teachers, wise men, prophets don't say things like this.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. All of us listening have probably wondered, whether in passing or at length, about the hubbub around artificial intelligence and entertaining the temptation that perhaps artificial intelligence might eclipse the human element, that there's a kind of infinite horizon that it could expand into until it can do all that the college-educated human person can do and more. That it might take over jobs as we presently know them, including data crunching, coding, copy editing, but also artistic work. And we're probably right to be concerned about some of this work, but many of these predictions are anywhere from outlandish to they're exaggerated. And there's a reason why. We're going to talk about this with Joseph Vukov. Joseph Vukov is the author of Staying Human in an Era of Artificial Intelligence. It's a rather easy read that gives you some intellectual context into understanding the great AI boom that we're experiencing right now. Joe, it's great to have you in the program.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, Marcus.
No problem at all. So we don't have a lot of time, and you write rather expansively on a lot of the issues, benefits, and also limitations of AI. So I want to start with this notion of limitation. It's very, very tempting to think, gosh, AI is booming at such a rapid rate, and at some points it's even aiding in coding itself. But really what we're looking at here is not real intelligence. It's operating off of data sets. It's training data that is utilizing to systematically operate off of.
That's right. I think there's a couple of points to be made. First of all, the one that you're already started making is that artificial intelligence isn't really intelligence. It's a poor name for it, and unfortunately it's kind of stuck with us now.
Right.
But it's a tool that's built off data, and it's massive amounts of data. Mm-hmm. So when you look into just how much data something like ChatGPT has gotten a lot of notice recently, it's something like all of Wikipedia and a ton of ebooks and just all this text. So it's a lot of data, and that's why it can replicate something that looks a lot like a human being wrote it, and in a fairly disturbing way, I think, too. But when you know how these things are built, it becomes clear that, no, this is not actually an intelligence. This is a tool, and a tool that's making predictions mm-hmm. and guesses based on a giant amount of data that it's been fed through this period that we call training.
That's right. And you know, my first encounter, if you will, with open access AI, had some students were trying to demonstrate to me just how brilliant they thought AI was. And I'm a fairly published individual, especially in online journals. And so they asked this thing to replicate, say, my thoughts on the Eucharist based on, you know, Dr. Marcus Peter and whatnot. And so I think this thing sampled off of articles I'd written in the past, and it attempted to make predictions on it. But one thing I could clearly tell even back then was that it lacked what, for want of a better term, I call the soul. And that's the key defining factor here. This is not a real intelligence that we're dealing with, because that is only grounded in the intellectual rational soul.
Absolutely. And I think the Catholic intellectual tradition, going right to the Catechism, is so helpful here.
Mm-hmm.
So the Catechism talks about the human person not only being a soul, but as being a soul and body composite.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're absolutely right that when you understand what that what the human soul is supposed to be. It's just very clear that an artificial intelligence doesn't have it. But I think maybe even in some ways more clearly, it's obvious that an artificial intelligence doesn't have a human body.
Mm-hmm.
It's located on servers and distributed across space, and it's being used maybe on my laptop or on my phone, but it's certainly not embodied in the way that a human being is. So I
right.
think there really is, when we look at a Catholic understanding of the human person, it's just very obvious that what's going on here is a technological wonder, maybe, and something mm-hmm. that we need to be paying attention to. But it's not a human-like intelligence, and it's not a human, because not only does it lack soul, it also lacks the embodiment that is essential to what we are as human beings.
That's right. And I love that you mentioned that. That's brilliant for multiple reasons. Number one, that implies that it lacks the capacity for expansive development of thought. It can only work off what it can sample. Human beings are actually capable of truly creative thought. That's the first thing. The second thing is, human beings are able to apprehend new information, new insights based on our observation through our material bodies. AI will forever be incapable of those two things.
That's right. That's right. And I think another thing that I want to bring up is that while I think there are important arguments, like the ones you're just giving right now, that there are severe limitations to what an artificial intelligence can do and how the human intellect can go beyond it, I think it's also important to note that in the Catholic tradition, an individual's intellect is not what makes us human or gives us our dignity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, the human being is a rational animal, so rationality and intellect is an important part of the human soul.
Right.
We could talk about that. Now, all that's true and important, but the Catholic tradition also adamantly says that an individual that lacks intelligence, for instance, the unborn, those mm-hmm. at the end of life, lack higher rationality, is still fully human and is still fully dignified. So I think it's important to do this parsing out of what can it do, what can it do, what makes human distinctive. But I also think it's important to pause for a minute and reflect on the fact that, you know what, at the end of the day, that's not the thing that gives us our dignity
that's
to
right.
begin with. So we don't need to focus on that alone, and can also step back and think about, what is it that gives us our dignity? And it's not just individual levels of intelligence.
Right. And it's great that you bring that up, because a human being, rightly formed at the very least, I got to be careful how I say this, will never want to seek to bring about the destruction and the wiping out of subsets of the culture and the population. Now, I know historically we've had individuals do that. We're seeing that in the abortive movement right now. But in general, a formed conscience for a human being will never seek to wipe out huge subsets of the population. One of the concerns, it's rather hilariously brought up, is in the great AI boom that we're seeing right now, will Skynet take over the world?
Yeah, the robots taking over the world, I think, it's a great question. I think the answer is yes and no. And mm-hmm. I think the no first is, you know, especially I grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, Terminator was an important part
That's
of
right.
my consciousness. And I think it's sort of this cultural touch point for a lot of people. And I think that we start to see these machines that are doing these very human-like things, and we worry about Terminator coming to get us
mm-hmm.
or taking over. And I think there's are really important questions to ask there. So the integration of AI and robotics for purposes like that do raise some really important questions for us to think about. But what keeps me up at night when I think about dangers posed by AI, it's much more the boring things, to be honest. It's the ways in which AI is slowly creeping into different corners of our lives. When you use an email app and mm-hmm. the email, you start a sentence and then it will auto-complete the rest
right.
of that sentence. That's a great example of, it's not a high-powered AI like ChatGPT, but it's absolutely AI and it's absolutely part of our lives. And I worry that the more and more that becomes part of our everyday lives in decision-making and composition and finances and healthcare and all the places where it's creeping in, that we lose a little bit more of our humanity
mm-hmm.
with every step that we cede over to the algorithm. So that, you know, I do worry about the Terminator and robots taking over in some ways, but I suspect that if robots take over, it will be much more in the quiet, boring
mm-hmm.
way than in the loud and exciting way.
Right, and you bring up a crucial point here, that those mundane, ordinary, transient, daily things that we do are all parts of the full human experience. They avenues where we expand our intellectual and even our capacity of the will to make fundamental decisions, even if it's something as simple as choosing how to word this sentence in an email.
Exactly. And this is when we talk about formation of conscience and formation of virtue. That can be big acts and extreme acts that help form that. But usually virtue and conscience is formed by small acts of the will in our everyday lives that slowly grow and build us up into someone who's capable of having good acts of the will and clear acts of conscience, and just things like writing a letter well. If we're always letting the algorithm do it, that will never be something that we're going to be able to form over the long term.
That's right. And we're going to continue this conversation on the other side of the break, Joe. And while I'm enjoying this very much, I will say that there are things that AI has achieved that we ought to bring up, including beating the Turing test, what that means in terms of moving forward, trust in academia, all of these things. My guest is Joseph Vukov, author of Staying Human in an Era of Artificial Intelligence. And we are talking about the lack of humanity in artificial intelligence. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Location, location, location. These are the three most important factors in real estate. The same might be said for colleges. Trudging through snow to get to an 8 a.m. statistics class is a much different experience than breezing by a palm tree to the raucous applause of a laughing gull. With the average temperature of 84 degrees and wetland nature as your backdrop, it's no wonder students tend to stay once they visit our campus. Ave Maria University, your future location, location, location. Visit avemaria.edu.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jingle.
In the fifth rule of St. Ignatius of Loyola's 14 Rules for the Discernment of Spirits, St. Ignatius gives a critical guideline regarding whether one is to change spiritual decisions or determinations when experiencing spiritual desolation. He wrote, "In time of desolation, never make a change." St. Ignatius is clear. We are never to change spiritual decisions or proposals that were made either prior to a current experience of spiritual desolation or to spiritual decisions made when a person was in a time of spiritual consolation. Father Timothy Gallagher writes, "As always in discernment of spirits, Ignatius has in view the spiritual life and what concerns it. These changes then will be changes with direct pertinence to our life of faith and pursuit of God's will." How might Rule 5 be of help to you today?
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Is there a universal call to prayer? The Catholic Catechism tells us man is in search of God. God, in the act of creation, called every being into existence from nothingness. Even after man sinned and lost his likeness to God, he remained an image of his Creator and never lost his desire for the one who called him into existence. All religions attest to man's essential search for God. The Catechism points out, however, that God calls us first to that mysterious encounter, prayer. God always initiates. Man's first step in the process is to respond. Prayer is a reciprocal call. Throughout the whole history of salvation, the covenant drama unfolds. The revelation of prayer in the Old Testament comes between the fall and the restoration of man. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. My guest is Joseph Lukoff, author of Staying Human in an Era of Artificial Intelligence. And we're talking about the extent and the limitation of artificial intelligence in light of true gifted human intelligence. Joseph, I mentioned earlier toward the end of the last segment that you had noted, and rightly so, that GPT-4 had been put to the Turing test and it quote-unquote beat it. Now, this caused some worry on the global level, but the truth is it actually isn't true cause for concern. Help us understand why that is.
Yeah, so what the Turing test is it's a little more complicated than this, but the way I like to think about it is it's a test that says when it comes to computer intelligence, if it quacks like a duck and looks like a duck and walks like a duck, then you don't have to ask any more questions. It's a duck. So the equivalent here is if you can ask it a question and it responds right, if it can write a poem that looks like a human-written poem, if it can give you ideas of things to do when you visit New York next month in the way a human might, then you don't have to ask the further question, is it a human intelligence?
Mm-hmm.
That's just what it means to be a human intelligence, is to have all of those features.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's this question now of if any of the current AI models can pass the Turing test, if one in the future could. And I actually want to grant that maybe in the future one can. So already we see AI being able to do certain tasks mm-hmm. in a way that's on par with human intelligence. And I always like to play it safe and say, well, maybe it will do pretty good at most of the human tasks, at least enough that it looks human-like.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the reason why I don't think there is this big cause to be concerned. In the history of philosophy and cognitive psychology, the Turing test has been this tremendously influential way of thinking about computer intelligence, because mm-hmm. the idea is if that a computer can cross this threshold, then it's just as good as human intelligence. But I think the problem here is the way that we've actually set the threshold to begin with.
Right.
The assumption behind the Turing test is that what human intelligence consists in is purely computational.
Mm-hmm.
And human intelligence isn't purely computational. There's a part of human intelligence that's computational, but we're also emotional and relational and spiritual and embodied creatures. And those aspects of our intelligence just aren't part of what the Turing test is capturing. So long story short, I'm not hugely concerned about the Turing test because mm-hmm. even if an AI is able to pass it, I think it's the wrong test to be giving in the first place.
Right. And I agree with you, because I think the big problem that it propagates into the culture is that it's functionalism. It's this argument that on a functional level, we're seeing equivalent responses to a human being. But the Turing test cannot by itself measure subcognitive substrates, you know, like metacognition, things that go on in the back of our minds, even as we're engaging in active thoughts. The human experience is proportionately far more complex than that. And artificial intelligence, no matter how complex, will never be able to achieve that.
Exactly. Yeah, this way of thinking that's behind the Turing test is exactly what you said, is functionalism. And I think it shares with a lot of modern ways of understanding human psychology this reductive turn.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that we can ultimately reduce what the human being is to something simpler. So something like our computational ability
mm-hmm.
or something like our biological processes. And those have been tremendously influential ways of thinking about the human person for the last 100 years. But of course, the Catholic tradition goes in completely the opposite direction.
Yep.
The Catholic tradition says that what the human being is more than what we can see that it is. You know, we are in fact eternal beings, and we have this entire spiritual dimension that can't be measured out or quantified. So I think that all these reductive ways of thinking, I think, are sometimes what are going in the background of these debates about artificial intelligence, where I want to say I'm not that worried about it, because
mm-hmm.
in the Catholic tradition, we're not only not reductive, we're, I don't know what the right word would be, but we're the other direction. We're more than what we appear to be.
That's right. We're fuller, basically. We approach the fullness. Which, okay, so even that, right, that raises the question of the kind of anthropology we're utilizing when we think about human persons. Because when we're measuring AI and its capacities, we are measuring those particular things that are akin to certain human processes, but they're not the fullness of human experience itself. And so there's a real Gnostic view of the application of AI is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it really is. I think an example that is a helpful one is if you or your listeners have any experience playing a musical instrument, mm-hmm. or even just seen anyone playing a musical instrument. You know that process, you can imagine playing a piano or playing the violin or a guitar or a drum set. And in all those cases, is there a functional way, a reductive way of describing what's going on? Well, sure, there's certain inputs, there's certain outputs, there's certain notes that are created. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, if you've ever had that experience, you know it's fully embodied. It's not even that you're thinking through the notes that come next. It's that, and this is the way musicians will describe it, my fingers are thinking through the notes. Mm-hmm. So I think that we have really good reason to think that these reductive, and I think you're absolutely right, these ultimately Gnostic ways and disembodied ways of understanding the human person, they're contrary to the Catholic tradition, but I also think they're just kind of bad philosophy. I think reflection and you realize, no, that's not the way human intelligence works. And yeah. I think the playing a musical instrument example is a really nice everyday way to make that point, I think, in a strong way.
And I completely agree. I love playing classical music at home with my children. Yeah. And Mozart is my favorite composer. My 3-year-old actually loves Bach, believe it or not.
Oh,
he's
great.
Constantly asking for it. And when you listen to, for example, Bach's Arioso, the way a digital instrument would play the Arioso versus, say, Itzhak Perlman playing the Arioso is going to be vastly different, because you're looking at a human experience versus a computer attempting to recreate what a human being would do. And this goes back to what I've been... I struggle to find another word other than soul. There's an incapacity of a computer to ever allow soul into the production of whatever it's trying to copy.
That's right. I mean, I think another good example, and this is going the other direction, is dancing. Mm-hmm. Going the other direction in that I can't dance, and I know exactly the reason why, is that I don't have that soul element. I try and overthink it. So if I'm at a wedding and there's dancing, I'm thinking, okay, now you move this direction, now you move that direction, and I'm trying to approach it in this functionalist way, and as you would expect, it's horrible, right? So I think that in order to engage a lot of these distinctively human activities, whether it's dancing or playing a musical instrument or playing in athletics, I think all of these things resist the idea that we can be reduced to these purely computational ways of engaging with the world.
Right. And so you allude to this problem that I had long been thinking about, which is my concern about all this is that the reverse problem that we're seeing permeating the culture is this whole push towards transhumanism, as if the human person is, as Rousseau says, you know, the interior self, and there's a capacity to upload this intelligence into a computer. But even if we were to create a perfect replica, that's still not the person. That's not the soul of the person, and that soul goes to eternal judgment, even if it seems that digitally this person, quote-unquote, lives on.
Exactly. Yeah, I think there's, and again, I think this is where both the soul and body component of a Catholic anthropology is really helpful. So yeah, these conversations about uploading ourselves to the cloud or carrying on our consciousness by putting ourselves onto a computer, I think that it's missing the nature of humans on several planes. So it's missing the ensouled nature of humans, but it's also just missing the really obvious embodied nature of humans. That if I'm on the cloud, I don't have a human body, so it's not me anymore. I think there's all sorts of other problems with the transhumanist movement too. There's this seeking for immortality through the means of man rather than through God.
That's right.
There's even this idea that what it means to be a fully flourishing human is to live a really long time and be very smart or something like that, which is almost exactly contrary to what the Beatitudes teach us about what a fully dignified human life look like. So yeah, I agree. I think there's multiple strands behind this the transhumanist ideas, one of which is what we've been talking about, this idea that the human being is less than what we really are.
That's right. That's right. And it's truly concerning. So in about 30 seconds or so, how can virtuous Catholics engage AI? We can't pretend it's not there. We ought not live in caves. But we ought to have a right philosophy of approaching it.
Yeah, I think three things. I think, first of all, and we've covered most of this territory, understanding what AI is, becoming educated on the way that it's built, the fact that it is a tool, and what that looks like. I think just a little understanding goes a long way in demystifying AI. Number two is building up a robust understanding of who we are. So this idea that we are ensouled and that we are embodied,
right,
I think goes a long ways in mitigating some of the concerns that people might have about AI. And then I think the third one is to do some careful reflection about where to invite AI into our lives and where not to. I think there might be areas where AI could play a role in our lives. I'm not going to be totally against using a spell checker that uses AI or something like that. But at the same time, we might want to reflect, do I want to let it use it to finish my emails? Mm-hmm. And the answer there might be no, because I want to write my own emails rather than have a machine do it for me.
Right. Joseph, I truly enjoyed this conversation, and I look forward to having future conversations with you.
So did I, Marcus. Thanks so much for having me on.
No problem. God bless you. My guest has been Joseph Vukov, author of Staying Human in an Era of Artificial Intelligence. The fact of all of this is that, and to round off this hour, this has been about the pursuit of truth. Our contemplation about the feast day of Saint Dominic is about drawing us to what is real. It's about reality. Truth cannot be truth if it is not grounded in reality, because truth is the apprehension of what is real as observed. It is a correlation between how we think about existence. And the closer we are to how existence really is, that's the closer we are to truth. So even when we engage artificial intelligence, you and I ought to approach it virtuously, understanding the truth of the human person and utilizing artificial intelligence as a tool virtuously and honestly. That's how we do it. So until the next episode of Ave Maria in the Afternoon tomorrow, stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.